If you follow the New Age movement or have any interest in New Age philosophy and thinkers, you know the name Osho. But did you know that Osho has a very strong Oregon connection? It's very strong. It's not good either. Not at all. I'm going to spend the next four of these podcasts telling you all about it. It's a four-part series. It's going to kick off today and then it's going to finish up on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. Hi, my name is Finn J.D. John. It's currently Friday, April 20th. And I'm reading you an archive column from the archives of the weekly newspaper column I write, Offbeat Oregon History. I do this every day. Of course, if you're subscribed to this podcast, you already know that. If you would like to know more about this little daily podcast and about the newspaper column, stay tuned or go to offbeatoregon.com. Today's headline is the first in a series of four, and it ran first in May 8th, 2010, under the headline, Rajneeshpuram, Oregon's Most Infamous Ashram, The Backstory. Here we go. Once upon a time in India, a man lived. He would go on to become one of the most influential thinkers in New Age thought, but at this time, in the early 1970s, he was merely a philosophy teacher. In an age that looked worshipfully at Mahatma Gandhi's teachings, this young fellow swam against the tide. He felt Gandhi, and socialists in general, glorified poverty too much. How, he wondered, was India to rise above its grinding, dehumanizing poverty without capitalism, without a striving for physical things? In contrast, what this teacher taught was that physical prosperity was good, not bad, because God was in everything physical, including the cash in your wallet and the Aston Martin in your driveway, and that we had but to awaken ourselves to Him to see the world in a whole new way and feel at peace with it, regardless of how much of it we own and control personally. As you can imagine, this message had great appeal for those who were wealthy and wished to remain so without feeling bad about it. The teacher set up an ashram near his hometown in Pune, India, in 1974. People would come to hear his discourses and to meditate with him in groups. Grateful plutocrats showered him with riches and gifts. At the ashram, this teacher mixed the spiritual traditions of India with a number of the human potential psychotherapies that had been developed in the 1960s and 70s at the Asalan Institute in Big Sur, California. These included things like primal therapy, gestalt, and, most notoriously, encounter therapy. He was rich, well-loved by his followers, but he had also become very unpopular with the locals in Pune. Thousands of well-heeled Westerners who had flocked to his ashram were constantly offending Pune residents with disrespectful and promiscuous behavior and appearance on the streets of town. Some of the less wealthy among those Westerners were financing extended stays in India by engaging in drug running and prostitution. Some of them got arrested, and it's still unclear whether the ashram was directly involved in their activities. The locals had started referring to him as the sex guru. There were more serious issues as well. In his active meditation groups, people flailed and thrashed and screamed, the idea being to get the body so busy that the mind could free itself to seek enlightenment. Onlookers found this alarming, like watching somebody have an epileptic seizure. To make matters worse, one of these groups, called the Encounter Group, had become notorious for acts of violence and sex, and even worse, combinations of the two, among participants during sessions. Some of these events were severe enough to require medical intervention. In his account, McCormick suggests that these acts were a planned part of Encounter Group, intended to open people up to their suppressed emotions and vent them, and that participation in Encounter Group was used like a rite of passage into the ranks of true initiates. If this is true, the teacher had become, under both Indian and American law, a criminal. It's worth noting, though, that McCormick's account makes no secret of his point of view, which is highly hostile to the sect. However, if McCormick is right, this may have led to the Indian government's decision in 1974 to yank his tax-exempt status and send him a bill for several million dollars in back taxes. By now, though, tax troubles were the least of the teacher's worries. His health was failing, his allergies were worsening, and he'd developed diabetes. He needed to move someplace dry anyway. Why not skip the country and keep his tax money? He just needed to find a place with wide-open spaces and a tradition of leaving one's neighbors alone. Central Oregon looked perfect. By this time it was 1981, and he had abandoned his old name, Chandra Mohan Jain, and taken on Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. Bhagwan, actually, I think that would be pronounced Vagwan, is Sanskrit for more or less blessed one. Sri is roughly equivalent to Mr., and Rajneesh is a nickname of sorts that he had acquired in childhood, and it means moon. A group of his disciples found the perfect place for him, a bargain at just $6 million. It was a huge ranch in central Oregon on the John Day River near the tiny hamlet of Antelope. After they bought it and rechristened it Rajneeshpuram, the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh snuck out of Pune, got on a jet airliner, and a short time later became, physically, though never legally, an Oregon resident. To say that hilarity ensued would be to take offensive liberties with the art of understatement and irony. That's it for today. You've been listening to an Offbeat Oregon History Archive column. If you'd like more, you can read hundreds of columns from the last 4 years on our website at offbeatoregon.com. On the website, you can also subscribe to get these podcasts delivered directly to your smartphone every day via RSS or iTunes, or join the conversation on the Facebook page or Twitter feed. All Offbeat Oregon stuff authored by me is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. See offbeatoregon.com/cc for details. If you're ever up in Corvallis and have time for a cup of something, look me up. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Have a great day.